Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Small Law Firm Coronavirus Growth Symposium call. We're just waiting for Arjun to join the call, and we're going to start shortly. Remember that to raise your hands, you need to press *6 to raise it or unraise your hand and *9 to unmute yourself. And at the end, where we're doing the Q&A session, we're just going to go in order of whoever raised their hands first.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Arjun.
Okay, great. Give me one second here. I'm just going to get some things set up. Almost ready. So this one today, this call today is really Q&A. I don't have a formal presentation ready for you or anything like that. And let me see, start video. Just gonna warn you, been working some long hours here. All right, so you got questions and I'm here to help you with your questions on how to make your business grow because of this pandemic. All right, what's working? What's not working? What are you trying? What are you trying to figure out? We got 400 members who are making more money and they're taking action and they're beginning, some of them, so look, some practice areas, you see the trailing indicators, which is like cash, right? Some practice areas you see, let me see here. There we go, that's what I was trying to do. So some practice areas you see trailing indicators, criminal defense, family law, you'll see trailing indicators because you get paid in cash, right? Other practice areas, you'll see leading indicators. Leading indicators are things like, like personal injury, right? You sign up cases. If you're signing up a whole bunch more cases today, you know that the trailing indicators, which is the settlements and the cash, will show up tomorrow. So there's a lot of personal injury law firms, for example, that haven't even begun to feel any of the effects of this pandemic because they're still settling and getting paid on cases. There are certain practice areas, however, like criminal defense, where you get the money up front, where, you know, they got hit hard real fast with with the effect, because they live very close to the trailing indicators, which is the cash. So I want to be really clear that when I talk about how our 400 plus law firms are doing great, look, some of them have trailing indicator type law firms like criminal defense, and they've clearly seen a slowdown because obviously people aren't going out and getting in trouble, right? The DUI has dropped off dramatically because people aren't driving and there's no bars to go to and, you know, things like that. But what they're seeing that's very encouraging is all they're doing, they're taking action on all kinds of leading indicators that will produce the cash later on. So for example, they're signing up more people to their e-zine. They're engaging with more prospective referral sources and beginning to develop relationships with potential referral sources now while everyone else is hiding out, so that later when things come back to normal, they're going to have all these great referral sources who they didn't have before. So there's all kinds of things you can be doing now to set yourself up for success later. Not Ogilvy. I forgot who it was. It was someone like David Ogilvy, but it wasn't David Ogilvy. He studied like five different recessions, and he saw over and over and over and over and over again that businesses, not just law firms, but businesses that advertise and market through the recession always come out way on top. And we've talked about this in previous calls, and it's because so many people are just basically checking out, right? So not only do your advertising costs go down, but your advertising reach increases at the same time that your costs go down. So you just get this gigantic positive effect. So listen, you can raise your hand, and I think SZ Firm, I'm going to take SZ Firm. Lorena, I can't take SZ Firm off of mute. How do I do that?
Sorry, John, it's Sonia. It says I'm unmuted. I don't know if I am.
I see you.
Hi, okay. Sonia. Hi.
Hi. I'm looking for tissue. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to just touch base on some of, the detail on what you just said regarding the trailing indicators. I think as a family law firm that's probably the category that we fall into. Like we had told you, I think I told you on another call, we've continued to move forward with the original marketing plan. In terms of the dollars we have allocated, we didn't pull back on anything. But I'm trying to, I guess I feel like, I don't know if we're doing enough, and I just want to be sure that we capitalize on all the possible types of marketing that's available, other than the gas calls and the Facebook and Facebook Live and all those different things. So I guess I was just looking for some input on if you had any other ideas.
I have lots of ideas, but first I feel like I can help you by putting some things in context.
Okay.
Okay. When you say you're sticking with your original marketing plan, I think that's a mistake.
Well, let me maybe just rephrase it so you can give me the right guidance. All I meant was a lot of our peers are apparently pulling their money out of their all the social network marketing. So when I say stick with the plan, I just mean that we haven't pulled any of that out.
Okay, so let me just say this for everyone else's benefit then, okay? It seems like people are going to one extreme or the other instead of picking a really good path in the middle, okay? So one extreme is pandemic, cancel everything. unsubscribe from everything, pull back on all your marketing. That's one extreme. That's a horrible extreme. All right. And the other extreme that people seem to be going to is almost like an ego thing. Like, oh, I'm too tough and I'm just going to keep doing it. And I'm not going to let this pandemic change my plans. What kind of idiot doesn't let a pandemic change their plans? Everything's changed. We have to change our plans, right? So the point that I'm making is everyone should have thrown their marketing plan and their marketing budget in the garbage a couple weeks ago. And everyone should have a new marketing plan and a new marketing budget based on all of the new opportunities around us. So let me put this into practical context for everyone's benefit. Now might not be the time to be telling people, come in to talk to us or schedule an appointment to talk to us about filing a divorce. Maybe because that's not where people's head is at right now, right? So you gotta enter the conversation that's going on in their head and not try to force them to enter the conversation that's going on in your head, because they're not gonna come and join you in your head. You gotta go to them, right? So what are the kinds of things that your prospective clients are thinking about, are worried about, are losing sleep about, are concerned about right now because of the pandemic? I can probably guess on some of them, but I can tell you how to find out exactly what they are so we don't have to guess.
Okay. Right?
I'm guessing that they're concerned about, what do I do with my kids? I'm stuck at home. I think they're probably concerned about, I'm bored at home. I think they're probably worrying about their job, their career, their income. I think they're probably concerned about their business if they're a business owner, just like all of us are business owners. I think they're probably concerned about if they have a mortgage. You know, what if I can't make my mortgage payment? Who's going to help me talk to the bank and get some latitude? I guess they're thinking about, you know, are there programs or will there be programs that I won't lose my house to a foreclosure? What about my car payment? What about my student loans? You get what I'm saying here?
Yes.
Now these are the things that I'm guessing about, but I don't know. And here's the thing. We don't need to guess because you have a relationship with your clients. Right? So we're doing all kinds of things for you. Well, you're a member of How to Manage a Small Law Firm. Have you noticed that the programming that we're doing just for our members, it's almost like I can read your minds. It's like exactly what you want, exactly what you need. It's exactly what you're thinking about. Well, that's because I'm constantly asking you guys, and we've got 30, your CEO who works with you every single week, your COO who works with you every single week, your CFO who works with you every single week as part of How to Manage a Small Law Firm, they're asking you what's going on. They're asking what your concerns are, what your questions are, and then they're feeding it back to us, and we're developing programs for next week based on what we're hearing from the members, right? I literally just got off a call with all of the, it was an all coaches call, all the CEOs, all the COOs, all the CFOs. We are just on a call just like this. And the topic was, what trends are we seeing amongst our members? What challenges are they having? What problems are they having? What's on their mind? All right. So, on Friday we have our members virtual happy hour. Were you on it last Friday?
No.
Okay. Well, it was fun. You should definitely be on it this Friday.
Okay.
So I have a special surprise guest who I'm going to have on this Friday's virtual happy hour for all the members. Okay? Let me just see if I can have some some magical whatever I do, okay? You're working from home, aren't you?
Yes.
At your office, you have a professional desk and a professional office chair, don't you?
I do.
And it's ergonomically correct, isn't it?
It is.
And you're working from home in a non-office chair from a desk that's not really designed to work long hours. And you're probably doing some work from couches where your back is starting to hurt and your hips are starting to get out of order, you know, up and down, right?
Yes.
So who do you think I'm having as my special guest on this Friday's virtual happy hour for all of our members to help you with what I know ails you?
Maybe like, I don't know, like a feng shui expert that helps you determine where you should, where in your house is the best place for you to work that would minimize stress?
I have a magician.
Oh.
Goes by the name of a chiropractor, but he's not a chiropractor. He's not just a regular chiropractor. He does something. He's got some kind of special thing that he does. His special training that like a very small percentage of chiropractors in the country have that I'll get him to explain on the virtual happy hour, but he's a magician. And he not only can like you go in there and you're like, my shoulder hurts. And he's like messing around with your ankle on your other foot and it fixes your shoulder. He just understands all these different connections. And I went into him for an adjustment because I'm working from home more now than I usually do also. And so he was telling me about how he's been working with some of his patients who are not coming into the office. And he told me a story about someone who was saying that her knee was hurting her. And so he said, he said, check your right earlobe and it's probably very tender. And she touched her right earlobe and she's like, oh my God, how did you know? He's like, cause this is what I do. That's how I know, right? And he had her do something with her earlobe and her pain went away on the knee. Anyway, the point that I'm making is you don't have to guess. Pick up the phone, call your clients and say, I want to do some special programming for all of my clients. And so I'm calling some of my best clients, some of my favorite clients. And I want to know what's going on. What's on your mind? What kind of stuff can I do that would be good for you? Don't think of me as a lawyer. Don't think of me as a family law attorney. What kind of resources can we help you with?
Okay.
Get the idea?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so for example, I think that one of the things that they're concerned with is whether or not if they have children, if the children get produced to the other parent during the COVID stay at home order.
Great.
They also have concerns.
Write a special report. Better yet, do a special Zoom meeting, do an hour-long presentation on the topic, do an hour or two of Q&A at the end. Zoom will transcribe the whole thing for you. Give the transcript to someone on Upwork or someone on your team and have them clean it up, turn into a special report. Send the video to someone to clean it up and make it look good and edit it out. And now, boom, you got a special report you can now use to share for free and get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe even thousands of people, to take your free report. And that becomes a leading indicator that tells us what your cash flow is going to look like in 6 months. Right? Now, it doesn't get the cash in the door today, but wouldn't it be great if you did that and you got hundreds of people in your local area to download this free report, to interact with this thing, to share with their friends, right? And then 6 months from now, all the other lawyers who are hiding out during this time are going to be like, oh my God, how does Sonia have so much business right now? Well, because Sonia wasn't hiding out like all the rest of you assholes when people needed her. That's why.
So when we're, and I do have quite a few topics that I think would fall into this exact category, just based on like logical things, you know, you get support. What happens if you don't get a check? A lot of people don't even realize the courts are open right now, or have concerns with if something happens, what do they do? Who do they call? Can they still get a restraining order? All those different things.
Okay, here's what I'm suggesting. Each of those is its own separate meeting.
Right.
Okay. Each of those is its own separate meeting.
Okay.
And as far as the question that I don't know how to pronounce that. People don't have to call in by Zoom on their computer. They can call in with their telephone and be anonymous. And you start off by telling everyone, this is being recorded. If you have a question, use a nom de plume. So Anais, would you please raise your hand? Anais? Sonia, I'm not gonna take you off, but Anais, okay. Just raise your hand. If you're on your phone, Anais, press *9.
I'm here.
Anais, are you there?
I should be here.
All right, well, I can't see you.
There. I raised
so
my
anonymous.
Hand.
I'm making the point, you're anonymous.
Okay.
And if you wanted to, you could have hung up and dialed in on your telephone, and then you'd be extra anonymous.
Yeah, actually, I'm using audio only on the computer, so no video. But the name is still there. Actually, that's not my name. I'm using somebody else's computer.
So tell them to register with a fake name to protect their identity, or tell them to dial in on the phone so that their identity is protected. And while you're inviting people to this thing, just be very candid with them about exactly what the, you know, these are the precautions we want you to take to protect your anonymity, if this is of a concern to you, because we're going to be talking about important subjects that we know might be very sensitive, and we want you to protect your anonymity because, number one, we're recording this, and number two, there could be someone on the call who you don't want them to know who you are. And you know what? When I call on you, I'm going to call on you with the first three digits of your phone, or the first three digits of your area code, not by name, not by your full phone number, and don't share your full name. And if you have an unusual name like Anais, make up a fake name. How do I pronounce your name, Anais? Your name isn't even Anais.
It's actually, you know, my name is not Anais. It's somebody else's login that's stuck on the computer.
But how do I pronounce this person's name?
Anais.
It's just
Anais. Well, if Anais wanted to be anonymous, Anais could just say her name was Maria, and I wouldn't know the difference, and it really wouldn't matter, would it?
Certainly.
That's the point. And just tell people, do it. Give me a fake name. All right. Take that person's hand down. And Sonia, are you still there? And who else has a question?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Does this help? Does this address your issue?
It does. And then in terms of creating these Zoom calls, I just would assume we would go through current client email list, PNCs that didn't retain us, email list, right? Just keep adding them. And
current clients, former clients, potential clients, parent discussion boards, ask your former clients to share this with everyone they know, because this is valuable information. By the way, this is not law firm marketing. This is public service education. Double check your own bar rules, reach your own independent conclusions. I'm not giving you legal advice. I'm not giving you advice about bar rules. I'm telling you how I personally interpret my state bar rules, that I don't think this is law firm marketing. I think this is public service education. As such, I have no problem saying to everyone I know, please share this public service resource with everyone you know, and you'll have way more people on your Zoom thing than any other time. It is a magical time for law firm marketing. I'm telling you, people are missing the boat. All right, next question. And Sonia, make sure you watch the video. Everyone can watch it on, it's how to manage, let me just make sure I get the site right. Give me a second, everyone. How to manage pandemic. Yeah, there it is. I think you've all been to this site. I think this is probably how you registered for this thing to begin with. What's going on? I don't know what's happening here. How do I get back to my Zoom? Hang on. Can you all still hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, something's happening and I don't know how to get back to my Zoom. I should mention that I never used Zoom before in my entire life before 3 weeks ago.
We can see and hear you.
Okay, sorry. It's back. It's back. There. Speaking of which, if you would all please share this resource with every lawyer who you give a shit about. If there's a lawyer who you care about, if there's a lawyer who you care about, maybe someone who refers business to you, maybe just a friend from law school, and you know they own their own law firm, and either you know that they're struggling, or you're concerned that they might be struggling, or that they could be struggling, I think you would be a real selfish piece of shit if you knew about this resource that I just posted and you failed to share it with them. And of course, I'd appreciate it if you did, because it would be good for me and it'd be good for them. And if they refer business to you and some of the resources that we help them with prevent them from going out of business and they keep referring business to you because they're not out of business, then that's good for you too. One of the resources on that page, Sonia, and this is the reason I was mentioning it, is a lesson on how to not look horrible on camera, like I look right now. But I don't know if you're aware that you're sitting like in a shadow, like we can barely
see. Yeah, no, I know. I usually don't put the camera on, but I couldn't figure out how to turn it off on the video. I'm not at my house.
Okay, well, I'm just making the point that
I know I can see it here.
Yeah, when you're doing Zoom calls, and you should all definitely watch that video series. It's free. It kind of takes you through how to do Zoom calls. Like for one thing, stand up. Like I'm standing right now. I'm not sitting. I've got a standing desk that goes up this high, right? So I can like move around and be more animated. And I'm just telling you, you're gonna be a whole different person when you're standing versus when you're sitting on these Zoom calls when you're doing a presentation. And make sure the light's in front of you, not behind you. And make sure the camera is at eye level or higher, because I can't do this. Like, when you're looking down, like big scary monster, right? It's very intimidating, but when you're looking up, it's much more friendly and accessible, right? Be thoughtful about what's on your background, right? I'm actually standing in front of my desk. The back of my desk looks, if I was standing behind my desk, this would be the background you would see. The boring white wall. So instead, I stand the other side of my desk with a calendar, because this is my calendar for the next 2 years, all of 2020 and all of 2021. And that's my office. That's the rest of my office. And that's my calendar for 2019. and this is my office. And that's the rest of our office. And if you saw the talk that I gave to my team, I gave it in front of this dashboard. And this is my, I got 25 people who work with me here. And this is our office. And the point I'm making is, if you're thoughtful about your background, if you're thoughtful about what you're doing with these Zoom calls, you can communicate things strategically that you couldn't really communicate in a lot of different ways. You follow what I'm saying? So I was having a Zoom call with someone yesterday, and me and this guy know each other really well, and he's a brilliant marketer. And I was teasing him about his background. And he's like, yeah. He's like, you're like one of the only people who knows why this background is what it is. And so I sat there with him and kind of went through and picked out all the different things in his background about what they were strategically there for, right? There was like a strategic picture of him and his wife to show that he was like a good guy. And then there was a strategic picture of him with his kids to show that he's, you know, even though he's a hard ass, he's got a good heart. And then there was a strategic picture of him with like his car. It's like, oh my God, that guy has a nice car, right? And then you could see like on his credenza behind him, his books, right? And, you know, you could see the books on his bookshelf. And like, I know that's not his whole book selection, but that was a book selection that was like strategically chosen to make a point to people who would recognize these books and be impressed by them, that he understands what we're talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I was able to go through and kind of like pick out his books. He's like, yeah, okay. So the point I'm making is, be thoughtful about this stuff. And 70s hair, it's coming back for all of us. But you know what's not coming back? I'll tell you what's not coming back. What's not coming back is being on a Zoom call with a wife beater when you happen to have very hairy shoulders. That's not me. I don't have hairy shoulders. But I was on a Zoom call with someone the other day, and it's like, oh, it was bad. It's like, I don't want to see your shoulders. You shouldn't ever wear a wife beater in public with hairy shoulders like that. It was gross. All right. Any other questions? Raise your hand, star 9 or star 7 to raise your hand?
Star 6 to raise your hand.
Sorry?
Star 6.
Star 6 to raise your hand if you're on your phone, or press the little thing on the bottom to raise your hand, and I'll help you with any strategies you're having, any challenges you're having. I can help you with marketing. I can help you with sales. I can help you with staffing. I can help you with documenting workflow processes and procedures to make your business more efficient. I can help you think about your physical plant, including insurance, including banking relationships, including the office. I cannot help you with technology. I've got other people on my team who can help you with technology. I can help you with financial controls, budgeting, cash flow projections, lines of credit, understanding the payroll protection program. There's probably no one on the planet who knows more about that for law firms than me right now. I can help you with mindset. I can help you with all this stuff. And I also can get off the call early and go do other stuff.
We do have Tom raising his hand. Are you ready, Great. Tom?
I've actually had some marketing calls from people about doing radio, about doing other types of media. I basically said, look, you know, people aren't driving right now. But I said, it's certainly something I would consider as part of a greater strategy once I know where things are going to be in a month longer. What's your take on media advertising? Are you a fan? Are you someone who thinks it's more about branding and less about actually getting conversions? What's your take on that?
You're not a member of How to Manage, right?
No.
Well, then on behalf of all of my members who are going to take your lunch, thank you. thank you for doing exactly what I'm telling you to not do. Thank you for sitting it out and letting everyone swoop in and take your breakfast, your lunch, and your dinner too. I'm being sarcastic, but I'm being serious.
Can you expound?
Well, you just told the radio advertising person, I mean, you have advertised on radio in the past, yes?
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay. And did you see positive results?
Limited. I thought it was really good for branding. I would not say when I did it that it was incredible for conversions, but I think it was good for branding, and I think it certainly led people, you know, to consider that as part of the call and response. Although,
okay, so let's start off with this. All marketing must have a way, must have a tracking mechanism.
Right.
Okay, so did it have a tracking mechanism built into it that you were paying attention to measure ROI?
Admittedly, it did not. Not okay. Enough that I would be happy with.
So anytime you do any kind of marketing during a pandemic or any other time, thou must always have a tracking mechanism. Okay? Mm-hmm. Lorena, you see that note from Pam Sutton?
I do.
Text Stephanie and find out what's going on with that and get us an answer, please.
You got it.
Thanks. Or Jimbo. All right. So it always has to have a tracking mechanism. If it doesn't have a tracking mechanism, it's just, you know, well, you can't track it. So you don't know the answers to important questions like, is it working? How well is it working? Which one works better than the other? Does this message to get my free report on apples work better than that message to get my free report on bananas? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to answer your question in two ways, but they're layered on top of each other, and one is actually the more important answer than the other. Your advertising salesperson, who presumably works on commission of some kind and is probably getting doors slammed in his or her face left and right, selling a completely, totally, 100% perishable product. Because the second that second is over, they can never sell it ever again for anything. Yes?
Yeah.
All right. That person's probably getting the door slammed in their face left and right. So I'm the guy who's going to call that person in my local market and say, what is your practice area?
Criminal defense, bankruptcy, personal injury.
Let's just end it. I'm the guy who's going to say, listen, I would like to talk to you about buying some advertising from you for criminal defense, PI, and bankruptcy. And your normal rate is, how much is their normal rate?
I don't think it got that far, but I asked.
Okay, well, let's just say their normal rate is $100. Okay. I'm prepared to give you $33. Mm-hmm. And if it works, when this pandemic is over, then I will sign a contract for a long-term project together. And they're going to say, $33, are you insane? That's crazy. I can't sell it for $33. Mm-hmm. And you're going to say, well, I'm speaking to you from W123. And I'm also speaking to Mary from W234. And I've got $33, and I'll give you the $33, or I'll give her the $33, but one of you can have my $33. and you want it or not. And someone's going to say, yes, I'll take it. And they're going to be really, really glad to have taken it. Because the minute that minute is over that they sold you for $33 instead of $100, they can never resell that minute. Mm-hmm. You follow what I'm saying?
I do.
Now, this is the symposium call. You're talking about, Staten, you're talking about is the momentum call. Yes, the members only momentum call is happening on a different line with Erica. So that's the less important answer. That's the tactical answer. You get the idea?
I do.
All right. Now the more important answer, the more strategic answer is you now have an opportunity to do some testing at a huge discount. Because what you want to do is you want to test A against B, multivariant A-B testing. Which one worked better? You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Except normally you have to do that testing at $100 per, and now you get to test it at $33 per. And if you find out that A outperformed B and A outperformed C, but then D outperformed A, and you figure that all out for $33, well, when the pandemic's over, we know that D is the winner. And we learned it on the cheap. You follow what I'm saying?
I do.
All right. Now, you got to always have a call to action. Don't ever do an ad that doesn't have a call to action. Not on radio, not on TV, not on a billboard. We have an entire 3-day workshop called Marketing, 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 which basically boils down to don't do anything that doesn't have a call to action.
Right.
Right. And our members, our last, I don't know if it was our last live quarterly meeting or the one before that, was all about this concept. It was all about this idea. And we spent 1.5 days really just drilling into what kind of call to action, how to do what's called a drip campaign, the whole thing, all right? I have a new book coming out. I have a new book coming out that's on that website that I did before, that's on resources, called Magnetic Marketing for Lawyers. And if you're a fan of Dan Kennedy, then you are really impressed and excited right now. Holy shit, how did Arjun get Magnetic Marketing for Lawyers? The answer is because I'm in Dan's private titanium group, and Dan picked me to be Magnetic Marketing for Lawyers everywhere. That's why. That book is coming out soon. It would be out already by now, but this pandemic really slowed us down. The point I'm making is always have a call to action. Always have a way of tracking things. Always have a way of measuring things. Before you commit a single dollar to any kind of marketing or any kind of advertising, make sure you have a plan for who's going to track it, who's going to measure it, who's going to analyze it. And it definitely, the only person I can promise you, Tom, should not be the one who tracks it or measures it is you. Because you won't do it. Because you went to law school. And by the way, I won't do it either. Because I went to law school. So we got to get someone who didn't go to law school to be responsible for tracking it and measuring it. And then bringing us the information so that we can then do our analytical analysis of it, which is what we love to do.
Right. Because we went to law school.
Because we went to law school,
yeah.
Right? But what we hate doing is the tracking and the measuring, or the measuring and the tracking. What we love doing is the analyzing. So before you even commit to the ad, make sure you have a plan for who's going to track it, who's going to measure it, what are they tracking, what are they measuring?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, don't do it. Make sense?
Makes sense.
Cool. That's really the more important of the two answers, because that is going to be the answer that is applicable post-pandemic. The play two radio stations against each other tactic, that's just a pandemic tactic. It works now. Local TV is giving time away also, just so you know. Now, if you have one of the things that some of our members, not all of them, but some of our members, particularly with the more, the firms with the better marketing plans, they are getting their marketing today for free. Not $100, not even $33. They're getting it for free. And the reason they're getting it for free is because, like Sonia mentioned, they actually have a marketing plan and a marketing budget. They have a line item in their budget for marketing. And so they know I'm going to spend $50,000 on radio ads over the next year. So they're simply saying to the radio stations, look, I'll sign your $50,000 contract. You just got to give me the next 6 months for free. Because otherwise, nothing's happening. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're leveraging it, basically.
They're leveraging it, exactly. All right.
All right, next we have Gina.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Gina Chevalier. I was asking about processes and procedures and whether you had a best practices guide or a suggestion as to what is the best route to go about doing that.
Are you asking me how to go about documenting policies and procedures and things like that?
Yes, what's the best way to start it and get them all in place?
First of all, the best thing is to acknowledge that you'll never get them all in place and manage those expectations. Because otherwise you set yourself up to be perpetually frustrated, pissed off, and disappointed.
Yes, I've been that for the past year and a half, trying to get them in place. I think I just have to break it down to like one task at a time.
Well, let me ask you, would it be helpful? Let me ask you, would it be helpful if someone were to help you conduct a diagnostic to determine which of the 24 key internal policies and which of the key 24 external policies and which of the key 50 procedures really needed first, second, third attention, so you actually could have a plan of and put things in proper priority?
Yes, I definitely think that would be very useful.
Would it be helpful if that person then made a schedule with you where every month they scheduled an appointment with you and brought to that appointment a templated sample policy, procedure, checklist that addressed that point and then helped you think it through, discuss the pros and the cons and how you want to do it, customize it just for you, and then they tweaked it, customized it, and shared it with you, and then also talked with you about how to implement it with your staff, how to teach your team, how to hold them accountable, and then in the next month, had the conversation with you about, hey, you know that policy, that procedure, that system that we installed last month in your firm that you were going to spend a month living with? Well, how's it going? What's working? What's not working? Let's tweak it and let's figure out how to get your staff on board with it. You think that would be helpful?
Yes, that's exactly what I used to do when I was the one writing procedures for somebody else. But now that I'm having to do it for myself, it's much more difficult because I'm having to do 600 other things at the same time.
What role were you in where you were doing this for someone else?
I was a staff attorney for somebody else. Before that, I was a research analyst for somebody else. So it was easy for me to document the procedures, the tasks as I did them, and then, you know, revisit them whenever I would redo the task, whenever I would do the task again to see what worked and what didn't. Basically go through the steps and edit whatever procedure I was working on.
Would it be helpful, do you think, if the person who was guiding you through this whole thing was bringing you policies, procedures, checklists, templates, all built together as a system that actually already worked, and then they were just tweaking it and customizing it for your firm?
Absolutely.
Would it be helpful if that person was actually an experienced professional legal administrator who actually studied and learned and understood how to run a law firm?
Yes.
Would it be helpful if that person was ruthlessly, brutally vetted, tested, and then went through 7 weeks of intense training and then had ongoing training, accountability, and support from a team of professionals who focus on small law firm management?
It sounds good. Is that, and you didn't pay me to say this.
Clearly, what would that be worth to a firm like yours if such a thing was available?
It's the time that it would take, that I would take to have to do this.
Okay, so how long do you figure each of those policies or procedures and systems would take for you to figure out and implement on your own if you were starting from scratch?
A couple hours a week.
So 2 hours a week?
Yeah.
Okay, and how long do you think it would take for you to also think through how to implement it and train your staff on it? And not the training of the staff, you'll still have to do that, but figuring out how to train your staff on it.
Figuring out how to train my staff on it? It shouldn't take that long. I mean, I have things in place already for them. Whenever I want to teach them something new, I don't think it may be a couple hours. Again, not a couple hours a week, but maybe a couple hours for the initial training.
Okay, so we'll figure 2 hours a week for you to, that this would save you. And what do you charge per hour?
Anywhere from $300 to $400.
$300 to $400. So let's just say 300 times 2 hours a week would be $600 a week, times 4 weeks would be $2,400 a month. That sound about right?
Yep.
All right. And what would it be worth to you to have the peace of mind of knowing that you were working with someone who actually knew what the fuck they were doing and had an objective perspective on the whole thing?
I mean, that's certainly a valuable valuable part of it. But, you know,
just give me a dollar. Give me a dollar. What's it worth?
I don't know. If it works, if it actually works what they're giving me, and I don't have to sit there and, you know, go back and be like, you know, you're just, this is not what I wanted, or this is not working for my staff or my clients or whatever it is. I would say if I didn't have to do any of that and I didn't have to think about it, a couple $1,000 probably.
Okay. I'm not saying that you're not going to have to think about it. And I'm not saying you're not going to have to do it. We said $2,400 a month for the time it would save you. And now I'm just asking if you put any value on the peace of mind, the confidence, and just having access to someone to help you think it through, talk it through, and analyze it instead of doing it on your own.
It's always good to have somebody to bounce ideas off of. I don't know. I would say maybe, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, I guess, if I had to put a value on it. You're just talking about like a monthly peace of mind.
So another $2,000 a month for the peace of mind?
Potentially, yeah.
Okay. And how much extra money do you figure your law firm would generate either by increasing revenues, decreasing waste, increasing efficiency, and all that kind of stuff if you had some good policies and procedures and systems in place for how the business is supposed to actually run? You think it would increase your revenues by 10%?
Yes, at least 10, yeah.
10% on how much?
On monthly, it's probably about 50,000 a month.
So that would increase your revenue by at least $5,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So it would increase your revenue by $5,000 a month, and it would save you $2,000 a month of your time, and it would give you $2,000 of peace of mind. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, those are the numbers we talked about.
So $5,000 of increased revenue you're expecting, $2,400 in real cost savings of time, and $2,000 a month of peace of mind. That's going to be 9,400 a month. You know how much a professional legal administrator costs to hire?
About 90,000 a year.
A good professional legal administrator, a good professional legal administrator, someone who really knows what they're doing, it's about $100,000 to $150,000 a year minimum. Some markets maybe 90,000, but you're talking about $100,000 bare minimum for anyone who's actually any good. If you're talking about getting someone for $60,000-$70,000, they're not going to be able to give you the peace of mind you're looking for, and they're not going to save you time, because really they're just going to assist you in doing the work as opposed to someone who's really driving it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I agree with your numbers. I think 9,000 a month is about right. About 100,000 a year. You know what would be really cool, Gina?
What's that?
What if someone who worked at the Florida bar for 4 years fixing all the problems that law firms have because this isn't done, created a business where owners of small law firms, where it didn't really make sense yet for them to hire a $150,000 a year full-time professional legal administrator, could bring on a timeshare fractional CEO to help with all the business plan, COO to help with all the professional legal administrator stuff we just talked about, and maybe even a chief financial officer to make sure that the numbers are under control for a fraction of what you just said it would cost you per month for just the chief operating officer. Wouldn't that be a good business to have?
Yes, that sounds very good.
Does that seem like a business that would make sense for you to want to engage to help you fix this in your law firm, to make your law firm more profitable and give you fewer headaches?
As long as it delivers, you know, on the promises, yes, absolutely.
What if it came with 100% money back guarantee? Huh?
That sounds good.
What if there were like 400 law firms all over the country who are already doing business with this company, who could, like, you could meet them in person and you could bring your spouse or significant other or someone else from your business and you could meet them in person and say, is this real? How does this work for you? Tell me what this is really like.
So are we talking about
then, and only after you talk to these people and only after you have seen how the entire thing works step by step by step by step by step, only then do you have to sign the engagement agreement. Would that be something that maybe you'd like to learn more about?
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Is everyone on this call interested? If you're interested, put in the chat box, yes, I want to know. Yes, I want to know more. If you don't put it in the chat box, I won't tell you. If you do put it in the chat box, I'll tell you.
Is that the boot camp?
Only for those of you who said, I want to know more, I will send you an email with information where you can learn more. And for everyone else, I won't bother you. Oh, look, everyone's writing, I wanna know more. Because only a fucking idiot wouldn't wanna know more. Okay. So, there's two ways you can know more. One is next week, we're starting a 4-week virtual bootcamp. Leslie, you're already a member. Do we have any members on the call? Would you please press star six or star nine or whatever to raise your hand if you're already a member of How to Manage? Members, press star six, star nine to raise your hand. I think Leslie, you're there. Sonia, if you're still there. Marie, let's unmute all of the members, please. Lorena?
Working on it.
If you're a member, please press star six. Or is it star six or star nine?
Star six.
Star six. If you're a member, press star six, please. This is the opposite of an unsolicited testimonial. If you remember, I'm asking you to press star six to raise your hand, just so you can let everyone know that this is real.
Sure, I'll say something.
Sorry? Hi, Marie.
Hi, how are you doing, Arjun?
Is that not basically exactly how our program works?
Yes, and just so people know, I mean, yes, we're in the middle of a pandemic, but my revenue doubled from February into March. I'm in the middle of a pretty intense campaign with a business owner's guide to surviving COVID-19. I had 37 people join my email list yesterday, and the guide isn't even finished. So it's finished today. So I'm just saying, like, this thing is rolling, and this is not the time to curl up in a ball and eat a bunch of ice cream and pretend like you're retired. You know, this is the time to dig deep. And it's just not even that hard. It's just
right. We're past that. Marie, yeah. What I want you to please share with them is, did you hear that whole thing that I was just talking about with before?
No, I was on a call. I'm sorry.
Regina? Okay. Okay, well then I need star six from another member, please, who just heard my little thing with Gina, my conversation with Gina, to say, is this or is this not exactly how it works? Lorena, get all the members off of mute. Star six or raise your hand if you're a member, and just keep them all off of mute together at the same time.
Leslie, you're unmuted.
Hi, this is Leslie. Can you hear me?
I do.
Wow, I was trying to press star six. I'm a new Zoom user as well. This has certainly pushed me to implement a lot of new technology. But I will say, big shout out to HTM and you, Arjun, that I don't think my firm would, you know, I think I'd be like head in the sand or head under the covers kind of deal, absent the year and a half I've been involved with HTM, that all the messages I've been receiving through the workshops, I've attended like, I think eight, and I don't know, five live quarterly meetings. You know, those messages are in my head throughout the day, every day, as I lead my staff and my law firm through this pandemic. You know, 24/7 laser-like focus, just adapting with everything. So you've given us the tools, you know, the seven different components of running a law firm. I need to get outside and exercise and that sort of thing, the me part, but, you know, sales, marketing, sales, production, HR, physical plant, adapting the physical plant, metrics, and we have the people watching over us, our CEOs, our COOs, you know, checking in with us if they don't hear from us, making sure we get on their calendars, you know, addressing our immediate needs and our long-term goals, making sure we don't lose sight of them, our strategic calendar, our business plan, our forward-looking budget, all of those things. So I can't thank you enough. It's changed my life.
Description that I was playing with, was that description that I was kind of teasing Gina with an accurate description of what it's like to work with us?
Yes, absolutely. And for me, beyond the business aspect, the professional growth and the financial growth that I've experienced, it's affected me on a deeply personal level. So it's priceless, really. I mean, I feel like a totally different human being than I did feel in before the fall of 2018.
Thank you, sincerely.
And I'm still working on it.
I mean, it's listen, personal development precedes professional development. And before we can double your law firm, we have to double the space for your law firm to live inside of. And I don't mean making you smarter, but we just got to help you become a fuller version of who you're meant to be. We have to help you grow personally as an entrepreneur so that we can grow your business.
And I would say I'm still evolving, you know, a lot of mindset work around money and my relationship with money, a lot of mindset work around, you know, just some really, I'm going to use your word, fucked up thinking around the doctrine of sacrifice that I've been living, you know, my 20 years of practice, thinking that, you know, my law firm is my baby instead of my mule, all that kind of stuff. I'm still working on that. And HTM is continuing to help me work on that.
Thank you. Do we have any other members who I can...
I have a non-member wanting to ask you a question.
Okay.
Amber?
Yes, I was. We're working on a newsletter. We're talking about our small business.
I'm listening to you. I'm texting someone in my office to get me something, but I'm listening to you.
One of the things that we're trying to do is reassure our clients that we are available to help them. What are some other things that we can do for our clients during this time? So that they know that we're there for them. One of the things I know I've done is educated myself about the CARES Act so that I can, you know, I'm aware I can help my clients with questions. But I'm looking at what I want to put in the newsletter specifically for our Social Security, our small business, and our civil practice litigation.
So you're asking me for like subject matter?
Yes.
Okay. What do you normally put in your newsletter?
We've actually never done a newsletter. We have decided that we need to up our marketing game, and the newsletter is one of the options that we've chosen to do that.
Okay. Shut that door, please. Just stay here. Ask someone to join me to share something with you to see some images that I don't know how to make show on Zoom, but before that, let me finish this question. You're talking about a paper newsletter or electronic newsletter?
Electronic.
Okay. How long have you been running your law firm for? How long have you been in business?
I'm a staff member of the business. They've been in business for over 70 years.
Okay, so you've got lots and lots and lots of clients, right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know that people, and your area of law, tell me again, is what?
Small business, social security, disability, and civil practice litigation.
Small business, social security, disability, and what was the last one?
Just. Standard civil cases, personal injury, real estate.
Okay. I don't think that I would be thinking right now in terms of a traditional newsletter. I think that right now I would be thinking more in terms of special reports. And I would be making these special reports very, very, very specific to very, very limited topics, limited issues. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. So,
I'm going to tell you I'm going to tell you some ideas, but I just conceptually, I don't think launching a newsletter is the right thing to do right now. That's why I was asking, if you're already doing a newsletter, that's one thing, because you already have an audience, you already have a following, you already have a subscriber base. But launching a newsletter right now, I don't think is the way to do it. I think the way to do it is a series of special reports.
Okay.
Now, the special report for small business owners is completely different than the special report for Social Security disability for people who need help with Social Security disability. You follow?
Yes.
Now, I can give you some ideas for topics that I think would probably be really interesting for small business owners. And I can give you some topics that I think would probably be very interesting for people who have Social Security disability issues and real estate issues. But all of those opinions would be colored by my preference for butter pecan ice cream as opposed to, what's your favorite flavor?
I don't eat ice cream, I'm allergic.
You poor thing.
I know.
She's allergic to ice cream. That sucks. All right.
I'm allergic to milk.
Sorry?
I'm allergic to milk.
Well, that's what lactate, you know, you can go to the nitrogen ice cream places now, make them with almond milk.
I haven't tried it yet. I keep on seeing it, but I haven't tried it.
Oh, you got to go into one of these places. It's amazing. They make them with yogurt. They make them with almond milk. It's the best. All right. I went to the workshop on how to grow my law firm. And what I learned is I can eat ice cream. Changed my life forever. All right. The point I'm making is anything that I tell you is going to be based on my personal tastes and preference and interests. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So what I would ask you to do is contact your clients and say, we are preparing a special report. We're going to prepare a series of special reports. Here's some ideas we have for some different topics that we think would be really, that would be relevant and important for small business owners. Would you help me out and just tell me which of these five ideas is most interesting for you?
Okay.
And then why is that most interesting for you? And then what are some things you'd want this special report to address that you would feel like, wow, that was really worth my time reading, watching, listening to? Okay?
Okay.
What kind of problems would this special report have to help you solve that would get you really excited about sharing it with all the other business owners you know?
Okay.
And that's how you figure out what to put in your special report. That also basically writes the special report for you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Okay.
Now go get some Ben and Jerry's dairy-free ice cream and get this done.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Stephanie, I just spent, Lorena, there's a whole bunch of background noise. Figure out where that's coming from, please, and quiet it down. Stephanie, I just teased the crap out of everyone with what the benefits are of being a member of How to Manage a Small Law Firm and how it works and what the experience is like and how they can come to a live quarterly meeting and how they can meet hundreds of our members and all that kind of great, awesome, cool stuff, mm-hmm. Right? And I want to show them just so they can visualize it, because I feel like no matter how much I explain it, obviously there's nothing like experiencing it in person. But since we can't do that here and now today, or at least for the next couple months, how do I show them? But what am I doing? Before you start doing things, what is that? Stop video?
I want to stop you showing so I can go in and pull up what you want me to find.
But they'll still be able to hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do, while Stephanie is making this work for me, you want to show them who you are?
No, I don't look good today.
You don't look your best today is
no,
the answer.
No, I don't.
But you do look good, just not your best.
Thanks.
You always look good.
I didn't sleep last night, so.
Neither did anyone. All right, now they see you.
No.
Okay, so Lorena, who's got another question while Stephanie's figuring this out?
I see Marie is raising her hand, but it might be from last. I'm going to unmute her and ask. Marie, do you have anything else to say? Marie?
No, that's okay. Sorry, I'll take my hand down.
No, that's okay. We're good for questions right now, Arjun.
I'm sorry?
Nobody else is raising their hand right now.
No one wants to learn how to make more money, huh? No one wants to know how to get more clients. No one wants to know how to hire amazing staff. No one wants to learn about the payroll protection program. No one wants to know about any of that stuff. Okay, well,
that's
while we're waiting
pulled
for-
pulled up the video.
Sorry?
That's okay, because I pulled
up the video. That's all right, because Stephanie just pulled up the video. So we're going to play this video to show you what a live quarterly meeting actually looks like to help you visualize it. And the way it works is, as a member of How to Manage a Small Law Firm, if you think of an ice cream cone with three scoops, the ice cream cone itself is our basic level of membership. And our basic level of membership, you get to come to our live quarterly meetings and bring a spouse or significant other. You can enroll your kids in the Kid Entrepreneur Program while they're there if you need some help with that. You get a Zoom call with our team twice a month on a different topic that goes very, very deep into a different topic of law firm management, very practical stuff. You get our membership website, which I'll give you a tour of later. You get if people put up their hand and say they want it or post in the thing they want it, I can do a screen share and take you on a quick tour of the membership site. You get the archives of all of our past live quarterly meetings that you can listen to and watch. You get our library of tools and forms and checklists and resources and all that kind of great stuff that we share with our members. You get 24/7, well, almost 24/7 emergency helpline. So if something blows up in your firm, and we get about, I mean, out of 400 members, we probably get 10 or 12 of those per year where someone has an emergency and it blows up and they need our help to jump in. You get a basic business plan workshop once every 18 months, or it might be once a year. I don't remember off the top of my head. Once every 18 months, you get a basic business plan workshop. And you get to go through a 12-week crash course to really get your business stood up, get your business plan written. And then, of course, you get to come to the live quarterly meetings. I think I already mentioned that. Now, that's the ice cream cone itself. That's the basic level of membership. If you add a CEO, that's like adding one scoop. If you add a COO, that's like adding a second scoop. And if you add a CFO, that's like adding a third scoop. And if you add a CEO, then your CEO is going to work with you personally every week. After your 12-week crash course, they're going to help you unpack your business plan that you built in those first 12 weeks. And then they're going to work with you every week. And once a month, they're going to do a deep, deep dive into your business, analyzing key metrics and key performance indicators and helping you strategize and pivot and make small adjustments every month so they don't get too far off course. And then once a month, and then twice a month, they're just going to have a little check-in call with you to make sure you're still making progress and available to you to answer questions. And of course, they're always available by email, a reasonable amount of email access. Just don't be abusive. And once a month, they're actually going to have private office hours where they just sit there with your business plan and review your business plan on their own to understand what's going on in your business. So they arrive on the next call with you really aware of everything that's happening. If you have a COO, then you're working with the COO or the COO, the chief operating officer is generally working more with your staff to help you implement policies and procedures and systems like we talked about with Gina. And if you work with a chief financial officer, then every month you're going to be going deep, deep, deep into your financials to make sure you really understand what's going on with your profit and loss statements, with your cash flow projections, with your accounts receivables, making sure you understand your cost of goods sold, making sure your profit margins are hardwired into your pricing strategies to make sure your collections are going on and all that kind of good stuff. That's what it's like to have a professional legal administrator helping you to manage the business of your law firm. The only thing is that if your law firm is, you know, grossing $1 million, $500,000, you know, you're not going to go out and hire $125,000, $150,000 full-time professional trained legal administrator. And even if you were willing to, who's going to train and manage and supervise them? Well, that's why 400 law firms around the country count how to manage a small law firm as the CEO of their law firm for them. And we are the COO and we are the CFO, and they get to come to our live quarterly meetings where, well, it's just an amazing experience to come to a live quarterly meeting. And considering you can come for free to check it all out for yourself, I think that's worth doing. Anyway, here's a video to show you what one of those looks like. What's happening here? Oh,
stop.
What password am I putting in?
You're not putting in a password. Lorena, let us know if you can hear this.
Lorena, can you hear me?
No, not.
I can hear you both.
Let me know if you hear this.
There's a certain energy in the room when you come to the HTM gatherings. Everybody really has an excitement for growing their practice, for making a better life, for help.
Can you hear that, Lorena?
Yes, I can hear it. It's a little blurry. If you can bring up the volume a notch, that'd be good.
I think you got to bring up your volume a notch.
How was that?
Maybe on your computer.
There's a certain energy in the room when you come to the HTM gatherings. Everybody really has an excitement for growing their practice, for making a better life, for helping people.
Which is so fun to come and see everybody and ask how their quarter went and what new things are they implementing in their firm.
We can be happy for them with their successes, and they're happy for us with our successes.
Real quick, how many people had their best year ever? This is a very motivational time. All the LQMs have been so jam-packed, full of valuable information.
The content is very thoughtful, it's very inspiring, it's very motivating. It systematically takes you through all of these different pieces of what it is to manage a business.
It's everything from what kind of office should you be in to how do you market your firm.
There's always something new.
Things we can implement, just ways to make life better. I promise that if you play all in, you will know more about your business than you ever imagined you could possibly know.
This is not a passive thing where you're just going to come and they're going to give you the magic formula.
You can't get this in a book. You can't get it on YouTube. You really have to go through this very detailed and rich content.
You're going to work harder than you ever have before, but you're going to work harder on the things that are going to drive you forward.
You will lose less sleep over your decisions. Your business will create more value for more people in the world. Business will be more profitable.
When I first joined How to Manage, I was making about $3,000 a month, and I was hoping to just make $5,000 a month. And when I saw people come to the mic and talk about $30,000 and $40,000 a month, I didn't understand it. What is that? And now I'm doing it, and it's so normal. And $1 million is so in my sight.
All right, so that was a obviously unplanned commercial, because no one could have fucked up the planning of that worse than that if it was planned. So you were all able to see that, right?
Yes, they were able. And I do have some people lined up for some questions if you're ready.
Yeah, let's go.
Perfect. Staten, you're going to come up. Staten, are you there?
There he is.
I'm here. Hello. Hey, Arzan.
What are you doing on land?
What's that?
What are you doing on land?
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm in Hawaii. I'm
okay. I guess again, I'll let you off the hook then. You're supposed to be on a boat. Anyway, go on.
I'm a travel refugee. I was wondering what the update is on the SBA process.
Not going to get into that here.
Okay.
These are almost everyone here is not a member of How to Manage a Small Law Firm, not the place or the time.
All right.
But since I have you.
Yeah, go.
You want to let everyone know of what it's like to be a member of How to Manage a Small Law Firm?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I unfortunately haven't been able to implement nearly and most of what you've been telling me we should, and I'm finally able to have the bandwidth to get around to doing it, and I'm hiring my first marketing person with the help of Doug Watson, and things are looking very promising. So I'm...
How long have you been working with us?
Doug, probably 3 months.
How long have you been working with How to Manage?
At least 3 years.
And what kind of results have you gotten so far? What kind of improvements?
Well, I've put in the foundational things so that I can succeed. But I've been, you know, as you may recall, I've been spending time, unfortunately, with ailing parents. And I just lost my father a couple months ago. So, yeah, I'm still, you know.
Right.
And he was my business partner. He was my law partner.
Okay. So listen, the question you wanted to know the answer to, I'm going to have more information about tomorrow afternoon.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks. Lorena?
Next up is going to be Robert, even though the name appears differently. Don't be misled.
Hi there. Hi. Can you hear me?
I do.
Oh, great. Great. I'm an estate planning and probate attorney, and I'm just tuning in for the first time, really. So I was just wondering, you were mentioned special reports and some other strategies for getting the word out and getting new clients during this time period. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions for somebody who does probate and estate planning, what kind of strategies or could I possibly employ in my marketing?
You want to know about strategies to employ in your marketing for estate planning?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you called all of your current clients?
We're in the process of doing, of calling and making, I think you mentioned, I think I was listening in yesterday, the gas phone calls.
Good.
So we've started doing that. And then
how many clients do you have planned that you're planning to talk to?
I don't have a number. It was kind of actually, now that you ask, I realize how random the process is. So I would probably, probably between 100 and 200, people, I think ultimately we hope to call,
How long have you been in business for?
Since 2000, I've been doing estate planning since about 2011.
And you only have 200 clients all that time?
Pardon?
You only have 200 clients in all that time?
No. I just think I was going to call the most, probably like the most recent ones. Honestly, I've had at least probably several hundred clients in that time, I would guess. I'm not sure.
Right, but we don't give a shit about them.
Okay. Okay.
Do we?
I'm sorry. Do you give a shit about whom?
Well, you have 700 clients, but you're only going to call 200 of them.
No, I said several. I'm sorry. I said several hundred. I didn't say seven.
Look, you have several hundred clients, but you're only going to call some of them.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So, calling every single one of them would.
So here's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
And by the way, I've had this conversation with thousands of lawyers. Not just during times of pandemic, all different practice areas, everyone does the same thing, okay? Consider the following. There's probably not one other lawyer on the entire planet who is legally, meaning under bar rules, allowed to pick up the phone and just call this person other than you? Because the bar rules completely prohibit that, right?
Right.
Now, even though you haven't spoken to this client in a year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, the way the bar rules see it, that person is still your client, aren't they?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so you're probably the only lawyer on the planet who is permitted under bar rules to call this person. Plus, when you call them, presumably they already know you. They probably already like you. At one time, they trusted you. And you can call them and ask them relevant, specific questions about their life and their situation, which gives you a gigantic competitive advantage. I mean, people pay lots of money for this kind of intelligence about prospects, right?
Yeah.
But instead of doing that, no. We're going to go try to find some strangers who have never heard from us before, who know nothing about us, and we know nothing about them. You see my point?
I get you. Yep. Yeah. So low-hanging fruit, basically. It's right there.
Yeah. So before you go and start trying to find new clients, go make everything you can with the clients you've already got.
Okay.
You've already paid for them. You've already paid to acquire them as a client. There's zero cost of acquisition here, right?
Right.
And you have an enormous competitive advantage. And at the time of a pandemic, I mean, Jesus, what a perfect time to call someone who you did their estate plan for them 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And, you know, listen, calling to check on you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still living in the same place? Oh, you're not. Oh, did you sold your house, but you never called me for a referral to a realtor? Are you still working in the same place? Oh, you're not. But you never called me to ask for help finding a new job. Has there been a change in your family circumstances? Oh, you've gotten married. Oh, but we haven't updated your estate plan. Oh, you've gotten divorced, but we never updated your estate plan. Oh, your spouse passed away and we never sent you a condolence gift. Oh, your kids graduated from college and they're now out on their own. Oh, your kids graduated from high school and now they're in college. Are you getting where I'm going with this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Perfect. Yep.
You started a business. You bought a property. You got married. You got grant. I mean, there's so much in their life that you, I mean, that's just the diamonds under your feet aren't even underground. They're just on your, they just need to pick them up.
Okay.
So listen, I can come up with a million ideas that you can go after for prospective new clients, but that would just be showing off.
Okay.
I would just be showing off to you about how many great ideas I have. The much more tactical thing to do, practical and tactical, is contact all of them.
Okay, super.
And let me just tell you one more thing, because every time we have our members do this, we have a very similar, predictable experience, okay? You're going to discover all kinds of things that are going to frustrate you, and they're going to piss you off, and they might even embarrass you. And to the extent that really burns you, good.
Okay.
Right? I want it to leave a scar. So every time you look in the mirror, you remember, don't do this again. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, you're going to pick up a lot of money real fast doing that.
Okay.
And by the way, just because it's a pandemic, I mean, you can be doing virtual appointments with estate planning clients. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great practice area to be offering virtual appointments for.
Right. And we're doing that. So that's the people really appreciative. It's perfect.
Yeah, I think that there's law firms all over the country that are going to discover the benefits of doing virtual appointments. And I think that's going to be something that's going to be much more popular in the future.
Great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Next, we have Leslie. Leslie, you can go ahead.
I'm not sure if you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking the question. I actually have two, if that's okay. I picked up a new prospective criminal defense client this morning, and I listened on Monday, and I was, when somebody had asked, do I reduce the fee in the case of pandemic, which was my initial gut reaction, and you had said, no,
don't do that to them.
Yep, not doing them any service. Well, about 15 minutes in, he asks, and of course I reduced the fee, and it was just this guttural instinct. How the hell do I get rid of that? And I guess my next question is, what is the second step after getting out of my own mindset that seems to be self-defeating?
You met with you were on the call where someone asked about reducing the fee. You heard
yes.
the explanation as to why don't reduce the fee. Intellectually, yep. rationally, logically, you accept the premise. It makes sense to you.
Yes.
Then you were sitting with a prospective client or talking to a prospective client.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, will you reduce the fee because of the pandemic, or words to that effect?
Yes.
And you learned what Mike Tyson meant when he said, everyone's got a great plan until they get punched in the face.
Yes.
Yeah. And you want to know how to not let that happen again?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is a Band-Aid solution for you, but this isn't really going to be long-term.
Okay.
Band-Aid solution for you is okay, this is all happening by phone and by Zoom, not in person, right?
Correct, yep.
Okay. I had a client years ago when I used to do law firm management consulting. And he just couldn't say no to people. He just couldn't say no. You mm-hmm. ask him anything, he just, yeah, of course, he'll agree to anything. And so we literally, on a big poster, got printed the word no and framed it and literally put it up on his office on the wall across from where he sits so he saw the word no.
Okay.
Sorry?
Okay.
And like, as funny as it is and as silly as it is, and this is a silly, hokey, goofy little thing, but it worked. He would see that and people would ask him questions and he would see that and he would just kind of like, he would catch himself about to say yes. And he'd say, no. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Okay. So do you know what your cost of goods sold is?
No, I'm going to do that analysis tonight after I review the video that you put up on Monday.
Okay. Let's just say for argument's sake that your cost of goods sold is, I'm making up a number, pulling it out of nowhere, it means nothing. Let's just suppose it's $87.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is goofy. This is hokey. This is a gimmick. I hate gimmicks, but sometimes gimmicks work. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure everyone understands that our John is the anti-gimmick guy, but sometimes gimmicks work. If you determine that your cost of goods sold is less than, say, $87, then take $87 in cash and put them into like a shadow box and stick it on the wall. And so every time someone says, will you reduce your fee, you understand that you've got some real costs involved. This isn't free. This is not really negotiable.
Gotcha.
The price was arrived at using a rational calculation. It wasn't just something you came at from whim. When you do your cost of goods sold analysis, when you actually have a budget that you run your law firm against, you're going to have a much easier time not negotiating prices, because you understand that when you negotiate the price over here, it has a cascade effect and shows up as a problem over there.
Okay.
But you see that this is connected with a pole, not a rope. And if you push it, it goes, as opposed to a rope where if you push it, it just kind of collapses. When you understand that there's a real direct connection between what you charge and what you can actually deliver, and of course, how you live.
Mm-hmm.
And people come along and start asking you, will you lower the price? It's like, I could lower the price, but only if you want me to leave something out. What would you like me to leave out? What part of this service doesn't matter enough to you to pay for it? And that's not,
gotcha.
being sarcastic. It's being like real, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine a meal. Like what's a meal, like a favorite meal you've had recently from a restaurant? Like you haven't had a restaurant meal lately.
Probably lobster ravioli.
I'm sorry, what is it?
Lobster ravioli.
Lobster ravioli. And did it have a side to it?
Yep, salad.
And how much did they charge you for the lobster ravioli with salad?
I think it was $24.99.
Okay, so let's just call it $25. And let's just suppose that the lobster cost $2. And let's suppose that the ravioli cost $1. And let's say that the salad was 50 cents. And let's say that it cost $2 in labor to assemble the whole thing. And okay, let's say, for argument's sake, that they know that out of every 500 dishes that are served to a customer, one of them is going to break and have to be replaced. And we figure that's another 10 cents for dish loss. And let's say it costs another 25 cents to wash the dishes and clear the table. You follow?
Yep.
So $2, $3, $4, $5, $5.50, $5.75. That's way low for cost for a food cost, but you get where I'm going with this, right?
Yes. Yep.
So that gives you $19.25 of gross profit using the example I just gave. Got it?
Yep.
And let's say that you know that your rent is $1,000. How many lobster raviolis do we have to sell just to cover the rent?
20.
Right, because 1,000 divided by 1925, $1,000, yeah, $1,000 divided by $19.25. No, we got to sell 50.
Oh, sorry.
We have to sell 51 lobster raviolis because we're not paying the rent out of gross revenue. We're only paying the rent out of gross profit.
Okay.
Are you following me?
Yep.
So to the extent that you didn't get that, that's how wishy-washy your connection is between what you charge and what it costs you to deliver and how you live. And that's part of why you're having such a hard time speaking your prices matter of fact.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. Does that help you?
It does. It absolutely does. And can I just say thank you from the bottom of my heart? You are brilliant. And if it wasn't for you, I probably would have been one of the attorneys who curled up in a ball and just started rocking back and forth. I was working for somebody. We closed the office on, I believe it was the 20th, and then found out I was not being utilized anymore. And I'm like, okay, well, am I getting paid? No, I don't have the money to pay you. and now we have an emergency brief that's due tomorrow, and guess who's doing it? Because I just can't say no.
You work for an attorney. You're an attorney.
I did.
You work for a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And he or she doesn't have any money to pay you.
Yep.
But there's an emergency brief due, and because you don't want to screw the client over due to the business incompetence of your employer.
Yep.
You are riding to the rescue for the client.
Yep.
Question. Why yes. isn't he, your boss, doing the emergency motion himself?
Very good question. I don't think, I don't want to say that they wouldn't be capable. I don't think they would be capable in the time we need to turn it around.
Well, then it seems to me like your boss needs to tell his kids that he's not going to be home for dinner because he's got, because daddy's got to pull an all-nighter because daddy didn't run his law firm like a real business because daddy's a shitty business owner because daddy doesn't have a business plan or a marketing plan or a sales strategy or any kind of documented workflow processes or procedures or a budget or financial cash flow projections. And this is exactly why, this is part of why I get so worked up when I see lawyers running law firms like shit, because the clients end up suffering.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, is he going to sign any kind of IOU for you?
Working on it. Hasn't given me a definitive answer yet.
Hasn't given you a definitive answer yet?
Mm-hmm. It was, well, if something comes in, yes. If nothing comes in, no.
Oh, fuck. I'm working from my office right now, and there's a book in my bookshelf at my house, and I know exactly where to find it. And I know the page that I'm looking for in this book. So I'm going to butcher this explanation. Okay?
Okay.
The author tells a story of a friend of hers who is a doctor who was working with an entrepreneur to bring a new piece of technology to market. Okay?
Yep.
And the two of them, the doctor who was actually making the technology work, and the other person, they hadn't really quite ever finalized their arrangement. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And her friend, the doctor, was very, very uncomfortable because he wanted to get the arrangement finalized. And she said, so why don't you just finalize the arrangement? And the doctor said, well, first I feel like I need to get the technology working so that I can then go to him and show him that the technology is working, and then he'll finalize the arrangement with me. You get the dynamic here?
Yes.
Now, this is exactly how white-collar workers like you operate. Because, hang on. Everyone can learn an important lesson. Can you see this? Can you see that?
Is it in the chat?
Can you see that?
I'm looking. Yes.
So look at this, everyone. Blue collar workers, and I come from a blue collar background family, so I'm not blue collar workers. Blue collar workers trade their time for money. Yes? You see that?
Yep.
That's how blue collars work. Blue collar workers work. They work by the hour, they trade their time for money. White collar workers they trade their time What do you think white collar workers trade their time for? Not money. It's self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, white collar workers trade their time for self-esteem all the time because they really don't have financial concerns. Not real, real, real financial concerns. We are not worried about money. None of you are really worried about money. I'm sorry to break with you, but you're not. You might not get to live in the house you want to live in, but I don't think any of you are really thinking realistically that there's a chance you're going to be homeless. You might not get to drive the car you want to drive, but I don't think any of you are really worried that you're not going to be able to have a car to get you around. You might not get to send your kids to the school you want to send them to with no student debt and pay their full tuition, but I don't think any of you are really worried about whether your children will or will not get a good education. None of you are living with food insecurity. None of you are living with medicine insecurity. None of you are living with housing insecurity. None of you are. Not one single white collar lawyer actually lives in the world that most blue collar workers actually live in. Because as bad as things might get, if you need to, you could put on a little juice and you know you can make more money in a couple of hours than most blue collar workers can make in weeks. And you know that's true. So what white collar workers do is they trade their time for self-esteem, and they do all kinds of really unhealthy things in their business to get that self-esteem. And because they're trading their time for self-esteem and they're only thinking about the money when they let it get bad enough, what the white collar workers are doing is they're setting up this cascade effect of cash flow where it goes like this.
Yep.
That's a black line, everyone. And then this is their self-esteem. So when their self-esteem is high, they're like, oh, I don't need any money. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of you. And when their money is low, then they, I'm sorry, when their money and when their self and when their money, you understand the thing I'm trying to describe here?
Yep.
So white collar workers live in a completely different world than blue collar workers, where they're trading their time largely for self-esteem. Entrepreneurs, business owners, which all of you are entrepreneurs, when you made the decision to start your own business, that happened to be a law firm, you became an entrepreneur. What successful entrepreneurs do, we have a very different relationship with money. We trade our money to buy time. All day long, successful entrepreneurs are looking for ways to use our money to buy speed. How can I get it done faster? How can I get it done with less of my own personal effort so that I can get more accomplished? How can I use this very simple to come by asset, which is money, plenty of it, lots and lots of money. There's an abundance of money. There's like an endless supply of money. What we have very limited is time. So if I can take something that there's an endless supply of, which is money, and use it to buy something that is in very short supply, which is time, that's a great value. That's a great way to go through life, right?
Yes.
Now, blue-collar workers, all they have is time, and they're trying to get their hands on money. Now, I want you guys to notice something. You all see that?
Not what it says. Yes.
Assets, liability, equity. This is a balance sheet. The blue collar worker has their time as an asset, and everything related to money is a liability for them. The white collar worker principally has their time, and really it's their education and what they can do with their time because they're educated, as an asset, and they basically go through life with self-esteem as a liability. A real entrepreneur, money is our asset. Our liability is our time. And to the extent that we can use our money to buy time, to buy efficiency, to build processes, to build systems, to build procedures, to surround ourselves with experts who've been down this road before, who have done this before, who can save us time and energy and trouble and making mistakes. That's how we build equity in our business. You understand what I'm saying here?
Yes.
Okay. Now with regard to back to the story of the doctor and the business owner. So what the author of this book said to her friend is, you have this completely backwards because you are thinking of this as a white collar worker and you're not understanding how this whole thing is working from the perspective of your partner who's an entrepreneur. You're worried about getting the piece of equipment to work before you tell your partner that he's got to finalize and clarify and sign your deal.
Right.
Well, the minute you show him that you've got the equipment working, you've now lost all of your leverage.
Yep.
So, Leslie, when is this deadline?
Tomorrow at midnight.
Well, how many hours away is that? I don't know what time zone you're in.
I'm in Eastern, so we're at 5 o'clock. So
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So what is that?
31?
24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. You got 30 hours. You got 30 hours of leverage here. Are you going to give it away for self-esteem? Because you want your boss to like you.
Not anymore.
If he really respected you, he'd fucking sign an agreement to pay you.
Right.
What kind of lawyer are you supposed to be?
Criminal defense, family, a little bit of immigration.
Leslie, I'm supposed to trust you to stand up to the prosecutor when you won't even stand up for yourself?
That's my biggest problem. When it comes to other people, I'm fine. Got a not guilty in the murder in the first. Knock wood, never lost an aggravated assault. But when it comes to me, the backbone goes away.
Listen. If my life is on the line, I want the ruthless motherfucker.
I'm with you. Absolutely.
Be your own advocate. Be the advocate for yourself that your clients deserve. Okay. Because one more thing I'm going to tell you. I don't care how much you disagree with me. I don't care how much we argue. I don't care what you say. I don't care what anyone says. I've had this argument with 1,000 lawyers. No exaggeration. If you're working on my appeal, I'm the client. If you're working on my appeal, and I know that you're not getting paid, and I know that in the back of your mind, you're annoyed and pissed off and resentful about your boss.
Yep.
I know that you're not at your best.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want you doing my appeal while you're drunk.
Yep.
I wouldn't want you doing my appeal while you're under the influence of any kind of drugs that mess up your thinking.
Right.
I wouldn't want you doing my appeal while you're exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want you doing my appeal while you're stressed out beyond and you can't think clearly. And I sure as fuck don't want you doing my appeal while you're pissed off at your asshole boss for not even having the decency and the respect to at least put something in writing saying, I promise to pay you. I got it. You don't have money. You're a shitty business person. You never bothered to write a business plan. You probably ignored 80,000 emails in a row from how to manage a small law firm. You probably had invitation after invitation after invitation to schedule an appointment with someone from how to manage a small law firm, and you didn't do it. And now this is the situation we're in, and you're fucking broke because you run your business like shit, and now you can't pay me cash. I got it. I understand. At least write me an IOU so that I can focus and be at my best for our client. Otherwise, fuck you, boss. Do it yourself.
You're not wrong. I'm with you.
Are you going to do this?
Yes.
Why are you going to do this?
Because a lot of the things you're saying, I've actually heard from my kids, because if it's four in the morning.
Why are you going to do this? There's only one answer that will get me off your case.
Survival.
Because your fucking client deserves it. That's why. Your client deserves you to be at your best. How fucking dare you handle his appeal when your head's all fucked up because you're pissed off at your boss? Your client deserves better than that. That's the answer.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize to me. By the way, I'm not pissed off. I'm just trying to really get through to you.
I understand.
In all sincerity, your client deserves you to be at your best. And if you can't be at your best, have the decency to tell your client, listen, I'm really sorry. I can't handle this. I can't handle this. Go to your boss and say, I can't do this if I can't be at my best. And I can't be at my best if I don't know that my own family is taken care of. And all it takes from you is to write an IOU. I'll wait to get paid.
Right.
I need to know that you're doing the right thing by me.
You're absolutely right.
I'm just seeing the comments there. Listen, Pam, I just want to say, maybe her boss isn't the shit. Maybe he's not getting paid either. Maybe he just genuinely runs his business like crap and literally just doesn't have any money. And maybe he didn't bother to get a line of credit. Or maybe he just doesn't have a budget or any kind of cash flow projections or financial controls.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
maybe
exactly the case.
Just suffering. I mean, this is what happens to law firms that don't get run like businesses. Every one of you. Listen, Pam and everyone else, I'm going to call you on this. I'm going to challenge you on this. Yes or no, would you or would you not advise or recommend or encourage one of your clients or a friend or a family member to invest in a business that was being run, let's call it a restaurant that's being run by the greatest chef in the world. Everyone loves this chef's cooking. This chef has won like every cooking award in the world that there is to win. And the chef comes to you and says, I want you to invest in my restaurant. I'm a great chef. I'm an honest person and I'm hardworking. And you know all these things to be true, right? But the chef doesn't have a written business plan, doesn't have a written marketing plan or written marketing budget, doesn't have a sales strategy for how to convert people who might be interested in coming to the restaurant to actually come into the restaurant. And then once they come to the restaurant, bringing them back for more again and again and again for repeat business. Doesn't have any documented recipes or instructions for how any of the work is supposed to get done in the kitchen, back of house, or in the front of house. Doesn't have job descriptions for how anyone in the restaurant is supposed to actually do their job. Doesn't have a budget. 12-month forward-looking budget, doesn't know their cost of goods sold, doesn't know their food costs, doesn't have cash flow projections, doesn't have anyone to advise him or her on their business plan, doesn't have anyone to advise them on how to run a restaurant like a real business, doesn't have anyone to help them with the cash flow, with the financials of the business, would any of you invest in that restaurant?
No.
No, why not?
Without the plan, it's going to fail.
Because you know it would fail. And here's the worst part. Before it fails, you know, what would happen with that restaurant before it fails?
The huge investment to get it started, and then the inevitable losses that are going to come with it, and the food's going to suffer. Clients are going to suffer.
Food's going to suffer. Exactly. See, the quality of the food's going to suffer. As this thing starts failing, the standards are going to start falling. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the money to clean the kitchen and keep it perfect, there's no money to clean the kitchen. So what are they going to do? They're going to clean the kitchen less often.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the money to buy the best ingredients isn't going to be there. So they're going to start to compromise on the ingredients. Right?
Yep.
And the money to, you know, when the fish, it's kind of like you could serve it, but maybe you shouldn't serve it. And if you had plenty of money, you would not even think twice. You'd throw it out. And you'd only have the freshest ingredients. Those standards are going to start to drop. And people will start getting sick. Before the restaurant ultimately fails, people will get hurt.
You're absolutely right.
And that is exactly how most small law firms are run today. And this pandemic is just shining a light on it. Now people are sleeping. Your boss was running his law firm like crap all along. It's just now you can see it.
Right.
So let me ask you, Leslie, if you're the one who has to meet with a prospective new client to convert them into a paying client, and if you're working from home anyway, and if you're the one who's negotiating prices with the client, and if you're doing the work and you're not getting paid, why not just take the client and say, you know what, pay me and fuck this guy?
That's a good question. That's a very good question.
I'm a very loyal person. I mean, people who know me, people who do business with me, I'm a very loyal person. I take loyalty very, very seriously. But there's loyalty, and then there's just being a doormat. And being a doormat is not a sign of loyalty. It's just a sign of being a doormat.
You're right.
Has this client paid you yet?
Yes.
So then your boss has a problem, doesn't he?
Yep.
Because he doesn't have the money to pay you, which means he doesn't have money to refund the money to the client, and he doesn't know how to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Time to put an IOU in front of him.
I agree.
Because your client deserves having you at your best. All right, I think I made my point to Leslie.
Yes, sir.
Lorena, who's next?
That's that for the call, Arjun.
I scared everyone else off. They're all here, but they're all scared. All right, well, I have a tendency to do that sometimes. It's okay. All right, listen, everyone, I got to go anyway. Pam, go to sign up for the bootcamp if you acknowledge you run your business like crap, or have the decency to shut it down, one or the other. I mean that really sincerely to everyone. Either run your business right or get out of business. John. No, John. If I may, as an appellate attorney, most filing extensions deadlines can be extended. I agree with that. Maybe getting this boss an extension and telling him if he won't pay you is his problem. Yeah, I'm sure that would make things much more comfortable for him. He'd probably like you more. He'll probably pat you on the head like a good little dog. But if you want him to stand up and do the right thing, it takes him 10 seconds to sign something saying, I promise to pay you. That's all that we're saying that he needs to do here, John. Sign something saying that you're going to pay me. Don't go out of your way to take the pressure off of him, to give your advantage away so that he feels better. That's just bad strategy. That's the epitome of trading your time for self-esteem. We did not say that Leslie was not going to do the work unless she got cash. We said she's not going to do the work unless she gets a written commitment to get the cash. I'm seeing Philip. Yeah. Okay. Someone's got a question. How do I know how deep in my line of credit to go? I'm only going to answer questions if your hand is up, and I'm only going to answer questions for a few more minutes. Then I got to go. Seriously.
Leanne wanted to ask that question to you, so I will just unmute her for you.
Are Leanne? All of the stats being recorded as well as the video and audio, Leanne? I mean, Lorena?
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is?
Yes.
Cool.
I can do video. Hello.
Hi.
I've been encouraged by a lot of the things I've heard this week on your symposium, that somehow over the years I've managed to do the things that you suggest to do, and I'm proud of all of that. But now business is drying up, and I have 7 employees who are depending on me to figure this out. They're there, dedicated and loyal, but the funds are starting to run short already in the operating accounts. We have a line of credit, but how deep do I go? How do I know when to say that I can't sustain this any longer? How long can this pandemic last before that surge, which I preached to them all about this morning in our staff meeting, is coming. I don't know how deep to go. Well, people say, you know, I should have pulled the plug.
All right. My answer is either not one penny or all the way to the last.
Yeah, exactly.
But my answer depends on whether or not you actually have a plan. And hope is not a plan. Crossing your fingers and waiting is not a plan.
Yeah, we have our plan to
you have
receive
a business
those
plan?
Calls. Everybody's ready. They're,
you have a business plan.
Yeah, and they're marketing it. We've been doing this for years, steady, growing. You know, but a stable existing business, predictable. That we have exactly the same kinds of expenses and...
You're not answering my question.
Year after year.
You're not answering my question. I'm asking, do you or do you not have a written business plan?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
You could email it to me right now.
No. I'm at home.
Where is it?
I'm on the server at the office.
So someone, if they had access to the server on the office, could email that business plan to me right now?
Yeah.
And that business plan would address your financial, personal, and professional goals?
Not all of them.
At least the financial goals?
Yeah, we have a budget.
Okay. And that plan includes a marketing plan, and we understand the avatar of who we're looking for and the avatars of the people we're not looking for.
I mean, not as good as it could be with if you were working with us, but
they're as good as they could be. Mine is not as good as it's going to be next year. It's better than it was last year, and it's not as good as it's going to be next year. So don't. There is no such thing as a perfect business plan. You get buried with your final draft of your business plan, and then it's still not perfect. All right. So you have a business plan. You have a marketing plan that defines who your ideal client is and where they are. You've got multiple different channels for reaching them. Yes?
Yes.
Good. You have a systematic formula, a systematic strategy for converting prospective clients into paying clients.
Oh, absolutely.
Good. And you know your cost of goods sold?
I think I want to review that again. I know, you know, what our expenses are, what the income is, but I'm a little fuzzy on.
More or less, you know your cost of goods sold. I mean, you know you're selling services that are profitable.
Right.
Okay. You'd be surprised how many lawyers I talk to, and they think that they can increase their volume. They think they can lose money on every case, but make it up on volume. Like, you're just getting
I have people come to me all the time wanting to do these contracts for abuse neglect cases, and I don't want that volume.
Okay, well, if everything you're saying is correct, which I have no reason to doubt you, I believe you. You seem like you're an honest person. You have an honest face over Zoom.
Thank you.
I don't know what kind of faith I have over Zoom. I haven't shaved in 4 days, but whatever, you know. Now, the next question is, have you pivoted your marketing plan to be responsive to the current environment?
Oh, yeah.
And is your team...
I have my list right here of all of the new marketing.
Good. And is your team executing the plan? Are they faithfully executing the plan?
Yes. We have everybody's assignments today on... how to notarize, if not face-to-face.
And every morning you're having like a team stand-up meeting and everyone kind of like says, this is my plan for the day, this is what I'm going to do. And at the end of the day,
Three times a week now.
Okay, so you're not doing it daily, but you're doing three times a week, like this is what I'm doing, this is what I've done, this is what I'm doing, this is what I've done, these are the results I'm getting?
Yes.
Okay, and they're putting causes... They're taking action on causes that are logically, rationally designed to produce effects.
Yes.
Okay. If everything you're saying is true, I'd go to the last penny. 'Cause it's going to work. Thanks. It's not like the clients don't need the help. I would be applying for a payroll protection loan. You know about that?
Done. That's submitted.
Well, that's going to get you 2 months.
Yeah.
Right. That's going to get you 2 months right there. Which you understand that's...
Any idea on how soon my application went in on Saturday, last Saturday?
Where did you submit it to?
The Huntington Bank, my local banker.
So
they're a multi-state bank.
I know a lot about the payroll protection program. We've got 400 offers. We're helping them get this done. I've got a relationship with the third largest SBA lender in the country. Mm-hmm. The third largest direct SBA lender in the country. There's 13 direct SBA lenders in the country. And I happen to have a relationship with the president of the third largest in the country. Mm-hmm. And we have been speaking several times a week, every week for the last month, including, just to put this in perspective for you, we spoke on Sunday night at 8 p.m. So when you're on the phone with the president of the bank at 8 p.m. on a Sunday, mm-hmm. I like to think that says something about the level of insight that I have. And most lenders have not actually submitted the application to the SBA yet.
Mm-hmm.
The way it works is you submit it to the lender, then the lender has to submit it to the SBA. Then the SBA has to underwrite it, which is like a joke these days.
Mm-hmm.
And then the SBA gives you what's called an ETRAN confirmation number. So what you're looking for is for your lender to give you an ETRAN confirmation number from the SBA. And what that means is the SBA has officially guaranteed that loan.
What was that, an ETRAN?
I put it in the chat, ETRAN.
Okay.
ETRAN is just the name of the system that the SBA uses. You're looking for an ETRAN confirmation number from the SBA. Once you get an ETRAN confirmation number from the SBA, what that means is that the SBA has accepted your application and they've officially guaranteed the loan. Okay. It's important for everyone to understand that the SBA does not actually loan money. The lender loans the money, the SBA guarantees the loan. Got it?
Right.
All right. So what you're waiting for is the SBA guarantee. Because once you get the ETRAN confirmation number that shows the SBA has guaranteed the loan, now the lender is safe to fund the loan because they know the SBA has given it 100% guarantee. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Until your lender can tell you that they have submitted it to the SBA ETRAN system, all you did was gave them paper that's sitting in a file somewhere. And until your lender comes back to you with an ETRAN SBA confirmation number,
mm-hmm.
they probably haven't submitted it to the SBA yet. Now, different lenders, once they get the guarantee from the SBA, I mean, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I mean, you're going to get the money eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get the ETRAN number, then you don't have to freak out.
Right.
Because then you can breathe easy. Yep. It's coming. If it's coming in a week or 2 weeks. It's
coming, I can get by.
Yeah, I'd rather have it sooner than later, but I'm not going to lose my mind because I know it's coming. But what we're waiting for is you're waiting for the ETRAN confirmation number from the SBA.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll stay, I mean, pay attention to all of our communications because we're going to be doing some programming to teach you more about that. And we have a relationship. Once we get applications processed for our members, our 400 members are going first. We're taking them straight to the back door of the bank and putting their applications in for them straight into the ETRAN system. After we get our 400 members through that door, then we're gonna invite everyone else to let us help you. But that's probably gonna be end of this week, early next.
Mm-hmm. Even if I, trying to not lose my mind, trying not to freak out, assuming that's going to be processed and I will get that loan. Back to my original question, a loan which is to be forgiven.
Yeah,
then how much do I want to go into the line of credit?
Well, let me ask you,
how much money did
your business give you last year?
Pardon me?
How much money did your business give you last year? W-2, K-1, and all the other stuff you run through the business?
$125,000 to me after everybody else is taken care of.
Seven employees?
No. I mean, I thought you were asking for net to me.
I'm asking.
$800,000.
Your firm grossed $800,000 and you only took $125,000 in total owner benefits out of it. That seems low.
It is low because there are lots of other benefits too.
My
package.
Got it. When I say total owner benefits, yeah. What I'm talking about is W-2 plus K-1 plus mm-hmm. everything else we run through the business.
Like 190.
Great. Well, if you had a machine that gave you $190,000 every year and a part broke on the machine and it was going to cost $100,000 to fix that part, but it's been giving you $190,000 a year every year, and it's going to keep giving you $190,000 every year or more, why wouldn't you spend $100,000 to fix the machine? You got to think of it like a machine. And that's why I was asking you about, do you have a business plan? Do you have a marketing plan? Because then you start treating your, then your business operates more like a machine. If you had said no to all those things, then I would have probably said, don't go one penny into your business in your line of credit, because you don't have a machine. You just have, you know, like Leslie's got, or Lisa, or whoever it was. You get what I'm saying?
Thank you.
You're welcome. If only you had a CEO and a CFO who helped you think all this stuff through and plan for it, where could you go to find such a thing?
Yeah, and I wish I had have known about you sooner, and I probably ignored 50 of your email messages in the past, just like you said.
I'm sure you ignored our messages, because you wouldn't have found us here if you weren't already on our list. So I'm giving you shit, but sincerely, please let us help you going forward so we can make things better. Because if you already got an $800,000 firm without our help, could you imagine how much better it could be if we were working together?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure now that I'm putting it all together in my mind that I do know a firm that works with you, and I've been amazed at her success recently. So.
Okay.
That's why I paid attention when I saw the message.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you at the next live quarterly meeting.
We'll see.
We'll see. She's still like, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Oh, I just wanted to retire.
Retire? Why would you want to retire?
What? Got other things to do.
Are you going to sell your law firm?
That's what I was trying to do.
Sell it to?
The associate attorneys.
And they're going to buy you out over time, right?
Well, we've been going back and forth on that, and then this is happening, and I'll just...
I'm just saying this. If I was going to sell an $800,000 law firm that gives me $200,000 a year of total owner benefits, I'm thinking you're selling that for at least half, you know, $400,000,
$500,000? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that means they're probably going to need to buy you out over time. And if I'm giving them my business to buy me out over time and give me $100,000 and $150,000 a year for the next 3 or 4 years plus interest, I want to make sure that one of the conditions is that they have someone who actually knows what the hell they're doing, managing and supervising and making sure that business doesn't run into the ground.
That would really help.
Well,
I didn't know about this resource until now.
There you go. All right. Guys, seriously, I got to go. This has been fun. Tomorrow we're on the phone. Tomorrow we're on the call again. And tomorrow is going to be all about, we're going to get really deep into improving, changing your relationship from a mere technician up to a trusted advisor with your clients. And we're talking about how, what that means and how to do it and why it matters, and get into some things you can do to actually make that happen for yourself. I am now signing out. Lorena, thank you so much for running this.
Thank you, Arjun.
I will talk to everyone later. Bye. I gotta go.